Some of you may know that I have struggled for most of my life with mental illness, but something's occurred recently that I'm finding out that I have an autoimmune disease as well. And that puts me into the category of those who are chronically ill. And as I have been exploring this new community of the chronically ill, I found that people were often saying that they felt invisible, that their illness was invisible because they looked normal otherwise. The visible part of my illness now is my cane, but if I didn't have my cane, you wouldn't know that I was chronically ill. One of the things I asked Obi to do was to have a service where we can name those invisible parts of ourselves so we can at least give them a voice. As an incest survivor, I understand that silence. I held it for a very, very, very long time. I endeavor at this point in my life, as an example to my children, to be secret and stigma-free, which is why I'm up here speaking to you. I'm going to sing a song that I wrote when I was very early in my healing journey and very, very depressed. But even on the darkest nights, it wasn't a flame, but there was a spark that kept me alive. And that to me is God. I had thrown out all of my preconceived notions or images of God as a benevolent parent or as an altruist. Anyway, whatever image I had of God, I threw them all out and I just focused on that spark. So I'd like to share with you my lament and hope in the song I call Survivor. Well, I guess it'll be this way. Thank you.
So earlier this week, I got a text from Elaine saying, hey, we'd like you to be in the service on Sunday. And I already got a copy with Obi. He'll fill you in tomorrow. So
tag teaming.
They're working well here. And when Obi and I met on Wednesday, one of the things he talked about was keeping it real. And so that's kind of where we're at this morning. And the song chosen today, there is a balm in Gilead to heal the sin sick soul, pisses me off every time I hear it. Too often we take that piece about making what is broken whole and translate it into a failure of the soul. And we call it sin, particularly in the world in which I live. Our one who's close and near and dear to me is addicted to one substance or behavior or another, or more than one, and more than one, and more than one. And so really, that is one of the things that drives me crazy, is that we try to heal a neurological problem with prayer in our society, and with people laying bare their soul of the sins they committed through their addiction. And I think that's something that works very well for a number of people. And then we get confused about whether it's the sin was the cause or the consequence, and where that comes in rebuilding lives. So I thought I would talk a little bit about what does recovery from and with addiction mean. For many people, sobriety is the first step, which is simply an abstinence from psychoactive substances. Recovery for many, however, describes a deeper process of healing. And my journey of healing starts with little magic moments. I'm sure we've all had those, where you're feeling like a piece of shit and things get better. So on September 7th, 2007, I had perhaps the most horrendous work meeting of my life. Not with my direct supervisor, but with my base supervisor. And the Vice President for Human Resources to call me on some behavior. And I left that and had to go to a work party where a lovely Catholic priest who was a full professor made me one of his signature vodka giblets. That is the last drink I ever had. And later that evening I had that first magic moment when one of my new co-workers needed someone to drive him home because he was as drunk as I normally was at those events. A few weeks later, in the process that it takes to get into treatment, I went to my very first meeting of my therapy group, and there was this one young guy, and he was all full of the bullshit. So, yes, I have learned, I am good, I am healed, amen. And I'm like, oh, he's got it. I know exactly what to do. They'll smile at me happily, let me go live my life. And then we took a break and we came back and another young man did the real work. And he started talking about all of the things he'd never done in his life sober. Things that most of us take for granted. He had never had sex sober. He had never been on a date sober. He'd never walked into a room sober from about age 15 forward. And I decided then and there I was going to do that. And I did. For the next 48 hours of intensive outpatient treatment, I laid bare all of the ways in which my internal sense of self and the way I negotiated the world were different. It's like, oh, good, I'm moving forward. This is great. And then, 4 months later, the Friday before Valentine's Day, I get a call from my boss that says, we need to talk. We need to talk now. And that is when she found out I had fabricated finishing my PhD. Rough day. People tell me I hit rock bottom in September. Wow, then comes February, sliding further downhill. And then, in the way our culture deals with this kind of thing, they asked me to keep the secret for their purposes for 4 more months. And the deal they cut me was great. They would post-date my renewal letter to non-renewal. So go back to December when they're supposed to tell me I didn't have a job for the fall. And they would never say anything bad about me on a reference call. Took that deal. And then a few months later, it's the front page of the student newspaper, and the second page, and the final page. A lot of college is devoted to me. Powerful. And then this very nice gentleman I worked with got me a job in China and reshaped my life. About 2 years ago, I hit what I call the plateau or the final phase of healing from my addiction. And that's when I really began practicing mindfulness. I get up every morning, I make a bowl of high fiber cereal with Greek yogurt, not fat, and I put berries in it. How many of you know how many berries approximately create half a cup? 9 to 11 raspberries. 7 to 12 blackberries, depending on the size, season, etc. And blueberries are the most amazing of all, because those little fresh ones from Minnesota that are wild, it's about 48. And those big honking ones you get at Costco, about 9. And so really taking that time to be present and to do that healing work. In that healing, I lost almost 200 pounds. I came to a place of serenity at that deeper, richer level. And I'm able to participate here and give back and to enjoy life in ways I didn't before. And yet I still get irritated every time I hear someone talking about addiction as a sickness only of the soul. And a song that is beautiful and that I've sung all of my life in healing services still creates that reaction.
Thank you, Brad. Thank you, Gwen. The journey through all that we carry is not easy. It is sometimes profane. It is sometimes hard to hear and even harder to hold. And so we have this time of bearing witness. Trusting that God knows these things, and we can be held and hold one another in it. So as we sing the verses 3 and 4 of that opening song, I invite you to include anything that's messy or profane or difficult to hear in your lament. And our usher will receive those. You can fold them over and pass them to the center aisle. And again, if you would like to have yours included but not verbally, after worship, hand that to myself or to Frank. Thank you.